Now, from the left coast to the D.C. Beltway, covering the topics you love to hate and hate to miss, it's the Silk or Joe Show.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome to the Silk or Joe Show. Co-host Joe here with you all today. Always happy to be with you. And we do have a guest on standby, so I'm going to run through real quick the introductions here of the program. The Silk or Joe Show is a Main Street Radio Network production. We do always want to gratuitously thank the Main Street Radio Network for allowing this program to exist. And it's 10 years it's been around in some form or other. That is this program. The Main Street Radio Network has actually been around in for about 13 years. Well, a very lucky number for them. Lucky number for us, because despite some of their clients objecting to content, the Main Street Radio Network has had our backs, even if some of their management disagrees with the content as well. But we do also want to extend thanks to the Salem Radio Network for distributing this show. Main Street Radio Network can be found at mainstreetradionetwork.com. I should really be saying that at the end of the show, because, gee whiz, what are you going to do with that information right now? You're not going to look it up right in the middle of the program, are you? That'd be very rude. And you can also find Main Street Radio Network on Facebook at Main Street Radio Network. We're on Twitter at Main Street Radio. And, of course, the Silk or Joe Show can be found on Getter, GETTR.com, at Silk or Joe Show. Alrighty, now the guest who is so patiently standing by is John Burlow. He is Senior Fellow at the Competitive Enterprise Institute and author of the book George Washington, Entrepreneur: How Our Founding Fathers' Private Business Pursuits Changed America and the World. John Burlow, always happy to have you on. How are you today? Since I'm not hearing him, I'm assuming something has gone wrong with the communications lines here, so... I will introduce his topic then in his stead. It seems that some people want the Federal Reserve to be investigated, perhaps by the Government Accountability Office, due to some issues with how they've been handling banks as of late. See, the collapse of the SVB and all that stuff earlier this year has Silicon Valley Bank, that is what SVB stands for. It's left a few people in a bit of a tizzy, as you can imagine. So, you know, there's an organization or two that wants to know about the Federal Reserve, why they allowed this to happen, and in particular, the competence of the Federal Reserve has been questioned. So, we are way unsure about exactly what went wrong there, but then it begs the question, though, if the Federal Reserve screwed that up so much, what else are they messing up? Because, well, like I said, if you screw up in one area so big, so major that this bank failed right under your nose, then how do you know that they're not going to screw up something else? Because, for example, right now they're raising interest rates gradually, hoping that that will deal with inflation. And they keep insisting, well, you know, these are so gradual and whatever that it's not going to impact anything. Well, how can we trust your judgment on that one when, in fact, you've already screwed up with a bank collapsing, right? So if they couldn't predict something so big as a bank collapsing, surely their ability to predict if raising interest rates will affect you, the consumer, their ability to predict that might also be in question. And when they raise the interest rates, that really kind of hurts anyone with a loan out there, and especially when we're doing this issue with inflation going on, people are already not in exactly the position to deal with interest rate increases. It's a real mess out there, and apparently the captain of this ship navigating us appears to be a bit intoxicated. We're doing a sort of Exxon Valdez metaphor right now. So that is why people are calling for the Government Accountability Office to initiate an investigation into whether or not Silicon Valley Bank can, the Government Accountability Office is investigating whether or not the Federal Reserve has good judgment in light of what happened to the Silicon Valley Bank. The Government Accountability Office is not investigating Silicon Valley Bank. That's not really their purview. Anyway, it's just a bit of a mess here that the government doesn't seem to want to clean up, because it's just really a screwy mess. But apparently John Burlow is here and I can't hear him, so I'm going to do something special. I'm going to ask him to get some time to respond, I'm going to ask our producer to text me when he's done talking. So, John Burlow, sorry that I've been talking over you this whole time. Apparently, I'm having trouble hearing you, but please go ahead with your take on this. Oh, we can't hear him at all. Never mind then. Okay, that is peculiar. Well, folks, I got to tell you what, this is the second day in a row that I've tried to record the show. We had an earlier issue trying to record a pre-record earlier this week, and, well, something went screwy with that as well, and thus it was not used. I guess maybe the Government Accountability Office ought to investigate our studio. That's not really, that's out of their purview as well. But it is disturbing that the Federal Reserve, who has all this control over our money, finances, stuff like that, that they seem to be just walking around without a clue what's actually going on in the real world. It's like they're caught up in their own theorizing on, as far as at least the Silicon Valley Bank went, because why did that collapse? The main reason, as far as we can tell, is that no one was looking at it because it had all, it checked all the right boxes as far as its policies went. Woke this, woke that, ESG this, ESG that. And why would any leftist who's in charge of our money investigate this bank? Because it has all the right talking points. Bam, it collapses because those talking points do not amount to profit or amount to managing a bank. And really, banks are in the business of making profit. They take your money that you put in them and they invest it somewhere else. You know, it's like, what was it, the movie It's a Wonderful Life. The money's not here, it's in Bill's house and George's house. And that's what banks do, except they put it in Bill's stock market portfolio, or in, not stock, you know, Bill's company stock, and they put it in George's company stock. And if that doesn't work out, well, your money goes away and the bank collapses. We saw that back in 2008. And this whole woke ESG stuff, that's basically just saying, here's a hole, bury the money in there and set it on fire. Because it's not investing based on whether or not the bank is profitable or the stock is profitable. It's investing based on whether or not the Democrat Party approves of the stock. You know, two very different things. The Democrats approve of a lot of things that are insolvent. You might recall Solyndra back in 2009, for example. The Obama administration went all in on Solyndra, green energy, clean energy, and it turned out to just be a money laundering scheme for people who support Obama. The company collapsed after it soaked up a bunch of cash. No one, none of the investors really got it back. But then the folks in the company who were Obama supporters, they made out pretty good. And that's just same thing with the SVB Bank and how it was running its operation. Invest in all these left-wing, pro-left-wing companies, the ESG stuff. Invest their consumers, or invest the people banking with them, their money that they put trust with them. Invest them in all these left-wing causes, left-wing companies, that is. And then those companies turn out to be insolvent. They had the right political words, but they had the absolutely terrible finances. And boom. They're gone, your money's gone, and the bank collapses, and where was the Federal Reserve in all of that? They were nowhere. So it's another thing, too. You got to watch your bank, whether or not it's doing some of this woke stuff, because some of them are. I think it was Wells Fargo that last year at some point they announced that for their home loans they were actually going to accept subprime mortgages because mortgage lending disproportionately impacted communities of color or whatever, where they couldn't get mortgages at the same rate as white people could. So Wells Fargo's solution was to allow subprime mortgages. Well, we know what happened last time. That's exactly what caused the 2008 financial crash. When the Congress, the Democrats in Congress, they passed a bill saying that, the subprime mortgages need to be accepted, or they passed some rule saying subprime mortgages need to be accepted. And because they impact communities of color and all that. And so the banks were forced by law to accept those. And then the housing market collapsed because too many of these loans couldn't be paid back. And now Wells Fargo last year voluntarily said they would be doing this sort of procedure that collapsed banks and stuff. So they, it's a really big mess that has been created by all this. And it's just a shame that the Federal Reserve isn't doing its due diligence here and investigating this sort of ESG stuff that Silicon Valley Bank got itself wrapped up into, because I think that's kind of the Federal Reserve's job in a way, isn't it? But Instead, they were just like, oh, well, SVB, they said all the right things, so we're going to ignore them, and they're just going to collapse right under our noses, and we're going to act all shocked and horrified. How could they? They said all the right things. How could they possibly have collapsed? And now those same people at the Federal Reserve are raising interest rates, and they're telling us there's nothing wrong with that. Are you really going to believe them when they do that? It's not really something. Their credibility is pretty shot, I would say, at this point in time. Oh, well, we will find out more about this as the days follow, because they are raising interest rates nonetheless. And, you know, will the Government Accountability Office investigate the Federal Reserve? I have my doubts on that situation, but we'll see how what the future holds, folks. More Silk or Joe Show after this break. That is certainly one thing the immediate future holds.
This message is provided by Boehringer Ingelheim. Idiopathic pulmonary fibrosis, or IPF, is one of the more common forms of progressive fibrosing interstitial lung diseases, with symptoms including breathlessness during activity, a dry and persistent cough, chest discomfort, fatigue, and weakness. There are more than 200 lung disorders that can lead to pulmonary fibrosis, an irreversible scarring of lungs that can negatively impact lung function, quality of life, and may become life-threatening. While approved treatments for people living with these diseases can help slow disease progression, new therapies are needed to help potentially stop progression. Fortunately, there is new research underway to assess the safety and efficacy of an investigational treatment in patients with IPF and other progressive ILDs. This is part of Boehringer Ingelheim's Phase 3 Global Fibrinear Program. To learn more about Fibrinear and eligibility requirements, visit fibrinear-ipf.longboat.com and fibrinear-ild.longboat.com.
Spring is here. Time to get out of the gym and take your workout outdoors. Whether you're walking, running, swimming, or biking, it's important to have a proper warm-up routine to prevent injuries. Five-time Ironman triathlon world champion Craig Crowe Alexander has some advice.
Sprains, strains, and injuries can happen to any athlete. Even a minor injury can affect your performance and derail your fitness routine. One of the best ways to try and prevent injuries is to make sure you prepare properly.
Alexander recommends always starting with a 10 to 15 minute dynamic warm-up.
Activation exercises combined with some dynamic movements like lunges are great for warming up. Focus on one specific movement at a time until you feel ready to go. Be sure to listen to your body and use proper support gear when needed to protect yourself and prevent injury.
The Curad Performance Series Ironman lineup includes rugged supports, wraps, kinesiology tape, bandages, and analgesics to support you on your fitness journey. For more, go to Curad.com.
My name is Judy Teeter, and I'm the mother of three boys. My youngest, Joe, was a great kid. He loved sports, music, and his youth group. One day, Joe asked me to drive him to an after-school event, which was about a mile from our home. I was driving through a green light when a car in cross traffic ran a red light and drove right into the side of our car, killing Joe. The driver was talking on her phone, so she never even saw the red light. She was so absorbed in her phone call. Before the crash, I didn't realize just talking on a cell phone while driving was so dangerous. Now it's something I think about every day. According to the National Safety Council, about 1 in 4 car crashes involves a cell phone. Hands-free is no safer. When you're behind the wheel, put away your phone. For Joe and for the thousands of needless deaths every year. Remember, there is no safe way to talk on a cell phone while driving. Find out more at nsc.org/callskill.
Adopt US Kids presents Multiple Choice Parenting.
Your daughter just had her first breakup. Do you A, put yourself in her shoes?
How could he do this to you? And for Sheila, she has split ends.
B, console her.
Oh, sweetie, this is going to happen a lot. 4, maybe 5 more times before you get married.
C, take charge.
Got to get this all straightened out. Give a little talking to, man to man, mano a mano.
Hey, Steve, it's now a good time?
No? Okay, no problem. Bye.
Or D, help her find a new boyfriend.
I know a great place to meet boys. The internet. Nice, single boys. Never mind. How about some ice cream?
As a parent, there are no perfect answers. But you don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same.
For more information on how you can adopt, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUS Kids, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Silk or Joe Show, everybody. So I'm going to talk about a favorite topic of CBS. It's either earlier this week or last week on 60 Minutes, you know, that Sunday show that they've been doing for decades that's supposed to be the epitome of journalism. Well, they try to put a finer point on the Ray Epps conspiracy. You might recall Ray Epps. I've mentioned him on the show a few times. On January 6th, we have video of him leading people into the Capitol. And after January 6th, a conservative journalist was wondering why no one was tracking this guy down when it was so easy to identify him. So the journalist himself tried to get an interview with Ray Epps in person, tracked him down to his house, and then the FBI went after the conservative journalist. Now, this is the same FBI, hitherto, who'd been arresting anyone they could find that was involved with January 6th. Suddenly, when it comes to Ray Epps, they harass someone who's tracked him down, as opposed to arresting Ray Epps himself. This led, naturally, people to conclude that Ray Epps, well, maybe he's an FBI agent. Why else would the FBI not want to arrest him, knowing full well who he is and where he was on that day? The only explanation is he must have been a plant in the crowd by the federal government. So to try and knock that off, 60 Minutes put a fluff piece out there about how Ray Epps was just some innocent, poor, deluded Trump supporter. And then they even brought in some guy from the January 6th committee to say that Ray Epps is just being used as a scapegoat for the ultra-MAGA crowd who doesn't want to think about how they're the real insurrectionists, and Ray Epps is just the scapegoat for them. I tried not to use the word scapegoat twice there, but I ended up doing that anyway. But yeah, he's trying to say that the people don't want to blame themselves. They want to blame Ray Epps and say he's the one that incited them, and when really it's their own angry, aggression, racist, bigoted stuff or whatever. That's what the January 6th committee guy was saying. The trouble again with that, though, is why wasn't Ray Epps arrested if he was, in fact, not a federal agent there to goad people into going in the building, right? And another aspect is that they tried to paint Ray Epps as the only federal agent, the only person that was being accused of being a federal agent. They're trying to make Ray Epps the Vladimir Lenin of January 6th. But that wasn't the case. No one on the right ever did that. Ray Epps was always acknowledged as being the federal agent we could identify, but it was never said that he was the only one in the crowd. In fact, up to 40 have been estimated to be in that crowd based on what the government itself has said. And yet 60 Minutes is there lying again about what the right thinks. So it's just really, excuse me, losing my voice here, bonkers that 60 Minutes would bother to publish this. And further, in their attempt to clear Ray Epps of suspicion, the government and CBS, like there's any difference at this point, they left one important question on the table, which I've mentioned, which I keep mentioning. If Epps wasn't a Fed, why hasn't he been arrested? They actually showed 60 Minutes. They actually showed footage from January 5th of Ray Epps trying to get people to storm the Capitol and breach it. He was saying on January 5th, the night before, hey, all of you people around me, we're going to breach the Capitol, right? Let's go storm the Capitol. Now, that is conspiracy. That is a crime. Epps carried out the crime. He breached the Capitol. So conspiracy with intent, followed by actually carrying out what you were conspiring to do. Why isn't he in prison? Why did the January 6th committee clear him? Why did CBS work with the feds to clear his name on national television of being a federal agent? Why did they put on someone from the January 6th committee to clear Ray Epps' name of being a federal agent? Why is Epps free right now? CBS itself spent an hour working with government officials to make Epps look like he wasn't a Fed, make Epps look like he deserved to be in prison with the other January 6th defendants. So why isn't he? Unless he's a Fed. There's people who literally all they did was walk through the Capitol. That Ray Epps actually stormed into it. He led groups of people into the Capitol. And he conspired the night before to lead groups of people into the Capitol. Yet right now, Ray Epps walks free while people who just walked into the Capitol or even stood on Capitol grounds without entering are locked in prison. Someone has been locked up for over 800 days without even a trial. And the Attorney General says that he still has a chance for a speedy trial after 800 days of being locked in prison. Yeah, right. That's a total gross violation of the law, right? Constitution right there. But leave it to the Biden administration to not care about law and order. Unless, of course, you are an armed robber or an Antifa person or whatever, or a terrorist of some kind who's on the left. Then you're back out on the street the day after. But we've talked about that before. Back to Ray Epps, though. As I said, CBS, they just went. And they worked with the federal government on this, you can be sure. They went through this whole campaign to try and make it look like Ray Epps is just some blithering idiot Trump supporter who stormed the Capitol. But then they left unanswered this question. You've shown every reason why he should be in prison right now. Why isn't he? There is no way they could have answered that adequately on the program. Like, he wasn't even arrested. The FBI, like I said, the FBI tried to harass a journalist who found Ray Epps. They didn't even want to arrest Ray Epps. And they haven't. Why wouldn't they? Unless he was one of theirs. But CBS, they made it clear he wasn't a federal agent. So there's an old principle, don't oversell. The government decided to have its branch in CBS oversell Ray Epps. Now, there's no doubt in the minds of any leftist watching that Ray Epps should be in prison with the rest of the January 6th bunch. Why isn't he? Are liberals really so stupid that they can watch this and not ask themselves that question? The viewers can actually ask themselves, after seeing this campaign to say Ray Epps is not a federal agent, these viewers aren't able to ask themselves, well, wait, if he's not a Fed, why isn't he in prison? Why is he being interviewed on 60 Minutes? Or are they just assuming? It's possible, because leftists don't really pay attention to what happens to political prisoners that their government takes. In fact, 45% of Democrats want concentration camps for the unvaccinated, so according to Rasmussen poll. So it wouldn't surprise me that they don't pay attention to what happens to conservatives who are arrested. So maybe they think Ray Epps was already arrested and this is just a long-settled matter, and he's being innocently accused. I'm not sure exactly what's in the mind of a leftist, the mental hoops that they're jumping through to justify why Ray Epps is walking free when really he should be in prison for 10 years at least for what he did, at least according to the federal government and other cases of people who violated the Capitol on January 6th. But it's crazy the ability. Why would CBS and the government even go through this, this whole effort to clear Ray Epps, but leave that question totally unanswered as to why he isn't in prison right now, why they're able to interview him, why he hasn't been in prison for 10 years like other people who were there on January 6th. It is rather curious, isn't it? Like, are they just that stupid? Do they think that we are that stupid? That all they have to do is put out this fluff piece? He's not a government agent. Don't ask any more questions. Don't use your brains, don't use your heads for anything more than a hat rack, right? Is that what they are telling us by doing this? Or did they really think that this wouldn't just raise more questions than it answered? Because again, they showed him committing crimes that should land him in prison on 60 Minutes. They showed him committing crimes that are worth prison time, yet he walks free, and they're saying, well, that's not evidence he's a federal agent, that he's walking free even though we have him on video committing federal crimes. It boggles the mind. Or is it that these people are really that stupid? CBS and law enforcement, they're really that stupid. Now, I would believe that if CBS, you know, I've seen their what passes for journalism at CBS. It's not the brightest crayons in the box, if you will. But the federal government, you know, really, for people who are persecuting Christians and conservatives, I expected more out of them. You know, they're trying very hard to be the Gestapo. But the Gestapo was a lot more competent. Or maybe they just watched a lot of Hogan's Heroes and saw, you know, the incompetent Gestapo agents like Major Hochstetter on that show and thought, well, gee whiz, that's the model to follow. Hogan's Heroes is a documentary to our federal government. Go figure. Folks, more Silker Joe Show after this break.
The pandemic is just one factor that forced companies to rethink the way they conduct business. In addition to remote employees, companies are uploading more data to the cloud, and workers are using a wide variety of apps and devices. As a result, businesses are more susceptible to security breaches than ever before. For 10 years, the Open Directory platform provider JumpCloud has helped businesses improve security and minimize vulnerability. Security continues to be a top concern for businesses. According to JumpCloud Vice President Eric Brown, organizations need to reconsider their approach.
Identity is the new center of IT and the foundation around which all IT infrastructure should be built. That's where we at JumpCloud come in. We help companies and people make work happen with secure, frictionless access to the apps and data they need with an open directory platform designed for identity transformation.
To learn how Jump Cloud can help your business, visit jumpcloud.com.
Vitamin B12 is important for supporting not only our metabolism, but also our energy levels. Our brain and our nerves need certain vitamins like B12 in order to function properly. Even if you're eating all the healthy foods like fruits and vegetables and getting, you know, great sources of protein, it's sometimes the case that you can become deficient in one or more nutrient, and that's where supplements can be helpful. So if you want to support your B12 levels, Jarrow's methyl B12 is a great supplement to consider to optimize your B12 levels. This type of B12 is recognized by the body, so it's delivered to your cells more efficiently. It's also been shown that it is a great way to make sure that you're getting a highly absorbed form of vitamin B12 and one that's going to be retained better than other types of B12. You can learn more at jarrow.com.
Hi, it's Practical Polly's radio show. If you're just figuring out that healthier cooking oils are better than solid fats, you may be asking, now what am I going to do with all these tubs of lard? Ever had one of those moments when your favorite skinny jeans feel too tightly tailored? Generously apply lard to your hips and thighs and those fancy pants will slide on like a dream. Or here's a family-friendly idea. How about making your yard into a lard fun park? Frost your driveway with a nice thick coating and give those kiddos a downhill thrill no matter what time of year. Having a bad hair day? Yep. A little lump of lard can tame your flyaways in a jiffy. So there's no need for that lard to go to waste or to your waste. But get your best heart-healthy trade-up with healthier oils like canola, olive, or other vegetable oils, which can actually lower your chances for heart disease. Now that's a tip worth keeping for life. Learn more at heart.org/facethefats. Canola Info is the national supporter of the American Heart Association's Face the Fats campaign.
No word in the English language is less convincing than probably.
Are you sure we should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably? It's been 23 minutes since I ate. I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Okay, now tell me what to do. Cannonball! Cramp! Oh, I have a cramp.
I can probably hit the green from here.
Probably.
Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober. Yeah, I'm probably okay.
Probably okay isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
The mission of Paralyzed Veterans of America is clear. Accessibility. Veterans who have served and sacrificed the best of themselves deserve access to the best our country has to offer. Access to meaningful employment. Access to the veterans' benefits they've earned. Accessible homes and vehicles. And access to every part of their communities. With PVA staff working inside VA hospitals, no other veterans organization has provided more real-time, ongoing support for paralyzed veterans and their families. PVA is proud to serve veterans across all branches, all generations, and all conflicts. Our nation's heroes fought for your independence. Join PVA in fighting for theirs at pva.org.
Welcome back to the Silker Joe Show, everybody. We are joined now by John Smirak. He is senior editor at The Stream, and he is also co-author of 13 books, including Politically Incorrect Guide to Immigration. John, always happy to have you on the program. How are you today? Oh, I thought I heard a cough there. There you are. Okay. Well, how are you today, John?
Yes, hi. Sorry.
Oh, there you go.
Can you hear me?
Yes. All right, so at the University of North Carolina, a bunch of professors sent out a public letter arguing that some new courses about learning about the Constitution and the laws of the country would infringe on their academic freedom. And it says that legislation violates the core principles of academic freedom that and force-feeding people like that knowledge. It's crazy that they would think that people shouldn't be learning laws that govern them, right?
Well, they hate the country. They're part of the anti-American movement, the treason movement that we saw going wild during the George Floyd riots, that we see when athletes won't stand for the national anthem, when statues of America's founders and heroes were destroyed. It's all part of an overt Marxist attempt to delegitimize the founding of the United States in order to suspend the Constitution. The Constitution is meant to be painted as a document written by and for slave owners. That's why the 1619 Project was promoted by the New York Times and the Pulitzer Committee and is now being taught, thanks to teachers' unions, in most of the blue states. The 1619 Project is a dishonest conspiracy theory. It's like the protocols of the Elders of Zion. I call it the Protocols of the Elders of Jamestown. It says that the United States was founded as a slave owner's conspiracy, that the founding fathers rebelled against King George III because they were afraid he was going to free the slaves. Now, the thing is, George III never freed any slaves anywhere, even where he had the power to do so. So that's one really important fact that kind of ought to block the logical force of the 1619 Project, but it doesn't matter. It's being taught anyway. And the idea is to make the next generation contemptuous of the Constitution and the founding principles of America so that they are not attached to them. They're not attached to the constitutional rights, to the limits on government power that exist, that are inscribed in those documents because of the Judeo-Christian worldview of the people who wrote the documents. And instead, these academics want a free hand. They don't want to be limited in their social engineering and in their confiscation of rights, their control of a private property, over the family, over free speech. They don't want any of these quaint 18th century restrictions on the power of elites to dominate ordinary citizens. And so it's incredibly dangerous and incredibly telling that professors at a state university don't think the voters who pay their salaries have the right to mandate even a tiny core curriculum on American government and American political philosophy. And as I wrote in my piece at stream.org, the state of North Carolina should defund its university system, close it, padlock it, fumigate it, sow the earth with salt. You would be better off not having a state university system than having one controlled by Marxists who hate the country, who see it as an opportunity to propagandize and indoctrinate the students and turn them into terrorists.
Mm-hmm. And I just want to point out, they talk about academic freedom. The problem is that every university, at least that I'm aware of, has certain core requirements before you graduate. How does that qualify as academic freedom if you can't graduate unless you take specific classes that they order you to? So on the one hand, they have their own little fiefdom when it comes to ordering kids to take certain classes, but then the people who pay their salaries can't mandate, hey, at least learn about the laws of the country.
Furthermore, these are the kind of professors who routinely grade down conservative and Christian students who oppose free speech. People like Charlie Kirk and Ann Coulter speaking on campus, they don't believe in free speech. They believe in labeling these things microaggressions or verbal violence. They're the first people to say they feel unsafe if someone's permitted to have a Republican bumper sticker on his car. The hypocrisy of these people is unspeakable. And again, there is no fixing these universities. They have been completely hijacked by enemies of the country who have legal protection in the form of tenure. The only thing you can do is defund like everything but the STEM program, let them have bake sales to raise money if they want to teach lesbian communism instead of Shakespeare.
I would actually argue that the STEM programs are pretty bad off too. I've seen people, professors coming out saying, oh, math is homophobic, and then someone did their doctoral thesis a few years ago on how math is sexist, and also the Smithsonian, they declared, in 2020, that math is also racist because, you know, non-whites can't process the idea that 2 + 2 only has one answer to it. So,
well, I agree with you that the STEM programs are ideologically colonized. The thing is, they actually are necessary to some degree. Like, we do need engineers and we do need doctors. And so I would love to close all the universities, you know, like the Khmer Rouge in Cambodia, and march the faculty into the rice paddies at gunpoint. But we can't do that because we do need the STEM programs. But everything else we could do without. If we went 4 years, 8 years, 12 years without producing any more English majors, any more history majors, any more psychology majors, we would be just fine.
Well, my concern, though, is that to make up for the lack of ideological indoctrination that they would have from that, what are they going to do to twist the STEM programs? Are they going to start doing like what some of the medical schools are talking about and graduating people based on ideology rather than competence? Are you going to have someone with a doctorate in engineering who doesn't know a wrench from a hammer?
Well, that is still a problem, but it would be a smaller problem. If the universities were tiny, if all they were STEM programs, it might be easier to fix them. But currently, right now, they are just like – it's like the bathhouses during the monkeypox epidemic. They're just vectors of infection of the most insane and destructive ideas in the world.
So then cutting down the staff until the minimum, bare minimum skeleton crew that will run the STEM programs,
right.
And then those will be much more easy to monitor than the hundreds of different classes and degrees and programs.
Right, right. And it would be nice to hear these once-tenured leftists finally asking customers, would you like fries with that?
Yeah, I want to... I would like to see how they would apply their leftism to the real world, because being sheltered and tenured in the university system like that, they not only are they given a nice big fund, a stipend and payments and money, but they really have no clue what the real world is like and what happens when their theories are practiced in reality.
No, they live like French aristocrats in 1788. And they think the rest of us should be allowed to eat cake if we're starving.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So seeing them go from tenure to, you know, living in one of the penury. I haven't heard that
penury.
Word.
Penury. That means poverty, desperate poverty. From tenure to penury.
See,
a pretentious bumper sticker that shows that I got a PhD in English. Look how much good it did me.
Yes, well, see, if you use that word on Alan, he'll know what it means. Me, I don't have the dictionary memorized like he does. I think he sleeps on it at night.
Alan will actually start rattling off from memory the Oxford English Dictionary definition, including the first historical use of the word.
For listeners, we're referring to Alan Nathan, host of the Alan Nathan Show on the Main Street Radio Network, heard during weekdays. Just got to get that pitch out there. Now, John, what can we do at this point, though, as far as schools go? Because as much as defunding all these programs would be nice, that's not really going to be happening anytime soon, as far as I can tell. So what can the average parent out there do?
I think the best thing you can do is treat college like a colonoscopy. You want it over with as quickly and painlessly as possible. the biggest enemy is the traditional college experience of living in a dorm and going to parties. So get your kids to live at home and go to the closest, cheapest school and get out of there in 3 years, if at all possible.
All right. And listeners, this is John Smirak that we've been talking to from the stream. You can find out more about what we're talking about in an article he published titled The Brew, Tenured Radicals to Taxpayers, Shut Up and Pay Us. More Silker Joe Show after this.
Spring is here, and there's no better time to try something new. Take a taste of Coke Zero Sugar and enjoy real Coke taste and zero sugar. Now available at participating Burger King restaurants. Try Coke Zero Sugar with your favorite food from Burger King. Satisfy your hunger and enjoy Coke Zero Sugar with a piping hot breakfast sandwich, like a sausage, egg, and cheese croissant sandwich. Sizzling sausage, fluffy eggs, and melted American cheese on a toasted croissant makes for a delicious breakfast to start your morning right. And don't forget the crispy hash browns. Or if the flame-grilled Whopper sandwich, BK Royal crispy chicken sandwich, or chicken fries are your fave, you are in luck. All Burger King menu items pair perfectly with an ice-cold Coke Zero Sugar. It's the perfect no-sugar sparkling beverage that goes great with everything. Take a taste of Coke Zero Sugar to enjoy spring your way at Burger King, where you rule. At participating U.S. Burger King restaurants. Sponsored by Coca-Cola.
This is sponsored by IBM. Job seekers, students, and career changers want to pursue roles in science, technology, engineering, and math, but aren't familiar with career options. At the same time, online training and digital credentials are emerging as a recognized pathway to opportunity. Misconceptions about the cost of training and what's required are often roadblocks to success. To tackle this and bring STEM education closer to underrepresented communities, IBM Skills Build is announcing 45 new educational partners. IBM Skills Build is a free education program focused on underrepresented communities in tech, helping all develop valuable new skills and access to career opportunities. Justina Nixon St. Till, IBM Chief Impact Officer.
Technology training can have a transformational effect on a person's life. IBM is committed to raising awareness of the many roles that exist across industries in science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. IBM Skills Build continues to grow with new partners around the world, working together to skill 30 million people by 2030.
For more, skillsbuild.org.
What is dedication?
I am the father of a 9-year-old little girl and a 6-year-old little boy. And I find fatherhood both relentlessly challenging and relentlessly rewarding. My daughter is biological and my son is adopted. I love them both so much, from the morning when you wake up to putting them to bed at night and every moment in between. It really is so special, and boy, is it exhausting. One thing that I fear about being a parent is the future for my children. I think a parent's job is to protect our children, but also prepare them for the world so they become good, kind human beings. But I'm also hopeful that the future holds a more inclusive and compassionate world for them.
That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
My baby brother, a father.
Come on, it's time for his nap.
Whoa, he can't sleep on his stomach. Babies should always sleep on their backs in a safety-approved crib, and the sleep area should be clear of blankets, toys, and other loose or soft items. It reduces the risk of SIDS.
SIDS?
You know, sudden infant death syndrome.
Guess I need to start studying up on safe sleep for little man here. Being his favorite uncle comes with big responsibilities.
For more information, visit safetosleep.nichd.nih.gov, sponsored by the Eunice Kennedy Shriver National Institute of Child Health and Human Development. You want to give your baby everything, so start with a safe sleep area. Babies younger than one should always be placed to sleep on their backs on a firm and flat surface, like a safety-approved crib. And keep blankets, pillows, and other soft or loose items out of the crib when the baby is in it. Learn more about safe sleep for babies at safetosleep.nichd.nih.gov. Sponsored by the Eunice Kennedy Shriver National Institute of Child Health and Human Development.
Hi, it's Practical Polly's radio show. If you're just figuring out that healthier cooking oils are better than solid fats, you may be asking, now what am I going to do with all these tubs of lard? Ever had one of those moments when your favorite skinny jeans feel too tightly tailored? Generously apply lard to your hips and thighs, and those fancy pants will slide on like a dream. Or here's a family-friendly idea. How about making your yard into a lard fun park? Frost your driveway with a nice thick coating and give those kiddos a downhill thrill no matter what time of year. Having a bad hair day? Yep. A little lump of lard can tame your flyaways in a jiffy. So there's no need for that lard to go to waste or to your waste. But get your best heart-healthy trade-up with healthier oils like canola, olive, or other vegetable oils, which can actually lower your chances for heart disease. Now that's a tip worth keeping for life. Learn more at heart.org/facethefats. Canola Info is the national supporter of the American Heart Association's Face the Fats campaign.
Welcome back to the Silker Joe Show, everybody. Thank you for sticking with us through this hour. And special thanks to our current guest, John Berlau. He was supposed to be on the first segment, but technical difficulties prevented that. John, he is a senior fellow at the Competitive Enterprise Institute and author of the book, George Washington, Entrepreneur, How Our Founding Fathers' Private Business Pursuits Changed America and the World. How are you doing today?
I am good. You did a great job describing that. I could hear every word you said, even though you couldn't hear me. And thanks for mentioning George Washington Entrepreneur, which is available at Amazon and Barnes & Noble and wherever books are sold, and many online and retail venues. And it talks about some of the monetary crisis and banking crisis in George Washington's day, about worthless money from some of the state banks, how tobacco warehouse receipts were sort of the Bitcoin of their day, and lots of good things in my book, George Washington Entrepreneur, that are strangely relevant today.
Yeah, well, that's what they say about history, right? It repeats itself. Same dance, different tune, I think, is another way of describing it. But as far as what's going on right now with the Federal Reserve, people wanting them to be audited by the Government Accountability Office, what's your take on this?
I think, well, we at CEI co-wrote a letter yesterday with Americans for Tax Reform, and signed by several center-right groups, calling for a comprehensive audit of the Federal Reserve by the Government Accountability Office. Now, it so happens that there is a GAO audit, which is GAO is Congress's accounting arm, that came out today sort of simultaneously with the Fed's own internal review. But by the GAO's own admission, there were a lot of things it didn't look at this fast. Plus, it can't look at, by law, the Fed's monetary policy with inflation, and then the rapid interest rate hike certainly played a role. And, you know, the interest rates at the long-term treasuries with the lower interest rates, you know, being a big factor in the collapse of Silicon Valley Bank and some of the troubles at other banks. So we need a comprehensive audit of the role the Federal Reserve had played with its supervision and its monetary policy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a key detail that, boy, would have made my monologue on the topic a little bit more informative there, that was missing, about how part of it was caused by the interest rates being raised. And that seems to be a blind spot for the Federal Reserve as they march right ahead, continuing to raise interest rates.
Right, and they never thought it was an issue enough to bring guidance to the bank. I mean, the super regulator, the Financial Stability Oversight Board, created by Dodd-Frank, which was rammed through in the Obama-Biden administration in 2021. You know, when Biden came into power, it mentioned climate change as a banking risk, but not anything about interest rates.
What? I think that goes with what I was mentioning about the ESG stuff, how they have, if you say the right political things, then suddenly you are granted a blind spot as far as things that could really impact you.
Right. I mean, Ro Khanna was actually making the face that case the Democratic congressman from California represents part of Silicon Valley, that, oh, we can't let Silicon Valley Bank fail because all these green tech projects will go under, explicitly making that. So, yeah, they were doing, you know, sort of what the powers that be wanted. So it kind of looks like, you know, or you can sort of infer almost that, you know, they may have been looking either way with, you know, the bad, you know, management practices for their interest rate securities.
Mm-hmm. And the Biden administration, they actually seem to be, as far as that all goes, they were marching right ahead after it. Even after the Silicon Valley Bank failed, Biden was marching, actually threatening to veto whatever bill it was, that the bipartisan bill that the Senate and the House of Representatives came up with about making sure banks and financial institutions actually work for the benefit of the investor and profit, as opposed to working for political causes that might cause the company to go under.
Right, the pensions. Yeah, the Biden DOL had said, you know, they can look at, you know, other factors, or like whether something's sustainable rather than just the return to retirees. I mean, those were retirement pensions, and you had, you know, in the Senate, Joe Manchin and John Tester go along with Republicans and pass a resolution disapproving that, and then Biden vetoed it, and he blamed, even though Manchin and Tester were there, he blamed MAGA Republicans for that. So only they wanted, you know, good retirement management, but. When if the result of this, you have, you know, blue state or Democrats' retirements blowing up, I mean, hopefully they'll know who to blame.
Yeah, they'll just blame MAGA Republicans for that, as opposed to the Federal Reserve. But then do you see, though, as far as the letter that you all sent, what impact do you suspect that has had? Have you all done something like that in the past to good effect?
There were, we've been involved in Audit the Fed, which was started by, you know, Ron Paul as a when he was in Congress, and, you know, championed still by Rand Paul in the Senate. You even have some, you know, lefties joining that as well as, you know, that are just, you know, you know, because it's, you know, whether you were concerned about the Fed, you know, being too close with Wall Street, which is something we're concerned about too. So you did see in the financial crisis, they audited, you know, who got some of the bailouts and things like that. That was sort of the first, you know, step in, you know, being able to audit monetary policy. But you need to go further and just, you know, have general audits of monetary policy too, just like the GAO can audit every other agency. And it's not, the Fed says that would compromise its independence, but all it would do was just hold it accountable. So yes, we've had a reaction before, and I think we will have some again with this. I mean, people are already thinking that this report today shows that which both Patrick McHenry, who's the chairman of the Financial Service Committee, and Maxine Waters, the ranking member, who often disagree, saw that there was a need for at least some congressional oversight of the Fed here.
Well, yeah, because this is a bipartisan issue. The Silicon Valley Bank, like we were talking about, they have investments in all these left-wing causes that are now going to go under. And if you can pin blame for that on the Federal Reserve, well, then gee whiz, they just betrayed all these causes that helped the Democrat Party. And of course, the Republicans are concerned about what the impact this is going to have on the financial system, and if this is going to impact any banks in the future. So everybody's got a stake in this.
Right. Yeah. Some of the loans still may go under, even with the bailout of all the billionaire depositors there. It's sometimes, you know, the loans, you know, if they were, is sort of made foolishly, it still might end up going under due to Silicon Valley Bank's mismanagement. So you can't. They need to. I think they're even realizing this, that, you know, there are limits to what you can do as far as ESG and you can't, you know, ignore, you know, normal common sense banking practices.
All right, John Burwell, Senior Fellow at the Capeva Enterprise Institute. Appreciate you being on the Silk or Joe Show today. One more time, George Washington, Entrepreneur. Where can we get a copy?
Amazon, Barnes & Noble, online and retail venues where books are sold. And you can also find out more information about some of the policies we talked to at CEI.org.
All right, listeners, you can go check them out. We're done with you all for today. Thank you for tuning in. And you can find out more about the Silk or Joe Show at MainStreetRadioNetwork.com and on Gitter, GETTR.com, at Silk or Joe Show. Be seeing you.
The opinions you hear on the Main Street Radio Network are those of the host, callers, and guests, and not necessarily those of the station, Main Street Radio Network, its management, or advertisers. The information on the Main Street Radio Network does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. So please, consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions or comments about Main Street Radio Network, contact us at 703-719-0433 or at our website, MainStreetRadioNetwork.com.